Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap, March 4th, 2015. February is over, Chris.
Ultron! 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 Ultron!
Screw talking about them Japanese comic books. Let's talk about the Marvel movie.
And I was like, screw talking about American comic books, too. Let's just talk about the movies, which makes everything easily digestible.
Suck too, but the movies.
Look at Chris Evans' abs.
Where I was going.
That's where I go. Every new Marvel trailer that comes out, they got their main character shirtless, and I'm just like, I mean, I'm not gay, but I would be for that. Shazam. But makes me very curious when the Captain Marvel movie comes out.
With Carol Danvers.
Yeah. I'm like, is she going to have a shirtless scene at the, like, in the trailer? And if so,
I imagine that she'll have, like, a bit of a tube top type of thing.
Yeah. And I'm like, will people be
midriff exposing.
But I'm like, will people call sexism on it? Like, that's what I'm worried about. But I'm like, no, they all do it.
Comic books, people always call sexism.
That is true.
I mean, it's merited because, you know, industry and so on and so forth. But it is also something that people tend to be a little bit oversensitive about. You know, situationally inappropriate, but karmically deserved, let's say.
Yeah. But holy shit, fucking Hulk punched the Hulkbuster up a building in this trailer. It's fucking tits, Nick.
That's actually something that we should, like, keep in mind. Like, every single move that has had the Hulk has featured shirtless Hulk.
Yes. I mean, Hulk is an Adonis. He's just these raw, magnetic sexiness. But it's sad.
Look at that moneymaker it is.
He can't ever have sex, Nick, because as you recall, the Incredible Hulk, he would Hulk out if he had sex. It raised his heart level too much. It's tragic.
Really?
Yeah, he tries to have sex with Liv Tyler, which was a, you know, terrible mistake from the start. But he starts having to do it, and he hears his heart rate rise, and he has that little fucking finger monitor, and he's just like, I can't. And it's like played for a joke, but I'm just like, the Hulk can never get laid.
That's incredibly unfortunate.
That sucks.
Because if it raises your heart rate, you also wouldn't even be able to rub one out.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Is like, can Hulk even bust a nut without, like, fucking, like, by the end of it, he's just...
that's the thing that happens every time Bruce Banner transforms. Like, Hulk angry! Hulk smashes their stuff and goes nuts. Hulk looks sidelong back and forth.
Falls
up a mountain.
Yeah, I'm just like, yeah, his Hulk's, like, game plan every time he Hulks out, he's like, must make it count! Everyone's just like, Hulk, what are you doing? Ultron's destroying the city. Hulk, be there in a minute!
Don't come in bathroom, Hulk, busy.
It's just like seeping underneath the door. It's just Black Widow's like, I'm gonna be outside. Oh, wow, we took this.
The most mature podcast that discusses manga. In the history of the internet.
This is such...
Only highbrow humor here on Weekly Manga Recap.
Such a disgusting way. After so quickly. Oh my god.
Seriously, you want us to talk about the whole jacking off, or you want us to talk about M-Zero?
Oh, man. Well, I almost want to talk about M-Zero, Nick, because I feel like it'll be over a lot quicker and we can get on to other stuff.
At least we'll have, like, you know, a desire to move on to the next subject.
Yeah, I could talk about Hulk jerking off for, like, an hour, but MXO, you give me 5 minutes, I can wrap this up.
You've gone through, like, 10% of the various expressions for masturbating that I happen to know.
Yeah. We've got a lot of depth and angles to still play in this Hulk scenario, but...
Spanking that radiated green monkey is...
We haven't even considered She-Hulk in this either. That's a whole new element that could just expand upon it.
I don't want to go into that, because then that makes me think of that alternate timeline that was like Old Man Logan or something like that. It was like a future where a bunch of people had died and Wolverine was still alive because, you know, healing factor makes him immortal. And so they said there were like all these hillbilly Hulk folk because Hulk had fucked She-Hulk.
Oh, God.
And their cousins, so, you know.
Was this a comic?
Yeah, it was a comic, yeah.
I don't know why I asked if it was a comic. I'm like, Nick, was that part of the 90s cartoon?
It was an officially published, you know, non-canon thing that happened about 5 years ago.
Huh.
And yeah, like, Bruce Banner, like, you know, goes Hulk, and it's like a step that he and She-Hulk had, you know, horrible incest monstrosity children. Yeah.
Oh, wow, that sounds...
Whenever people, like, think of these things, like, they should never actually write comics about them, basically.
Well, as long as they make them...
That, like, you know, if you and I ever bring up a subject in comics, like, what if... Someone will still take that and make it into a comic.
Yeah, I was gonna say, as long as you make it not canon, though, it's okay.
No, it's not.
That is true. I did see, like, in the Ultimates universe, the Blob ate the Wasp, and I was just like, even in, like, a up universe, I'm still like, that's pretty fucking jacked up, dude.
Oh, that's so... They did some weird fucking shit in the Ultimate universe. Especially with the X-Men in general.
Yeah, anyways.
Let's move on from that now.
Let's get to the manga at hand.
Okay, M-Zero. So, this is a story about this guy whose name I never bothered actually memorizing. His main character. This is a bad sign already. Okay. Kuzumi is his name. And basically, he takes this interview to get into this private school, and it goes poorly because for some reason, when he's asked the question, what if you could use magic, what would you do? He goes, I would take over the world or something. And so this girl is like, hee-hee-hee, that's so funny. And he's like, I was completely thrown off by her reaction to that. And then after that, I was so messed up that I failed the rest of the exam. So I'm going to go to the school, even though I didn't get admitted, and I'm going to confront her because I want an apology from her. And it's totally not because I got the hots for her, because she's cute and stuff. No, totally not that. By the end of the chapter, he will realize that it's just that he has a crush on her. So he goes into this school, and this teacher finds him and is like, what the hell are you doing? Get the hell out. And Kuzumi's like, no. And you can't make me. Well, yes, I can, because I have magic. I've got this card that lets me use magic, and the school is an academy to teach students how to use magic by using these cards which have spells put on them, and you combine the spells with the cards and other things. You can do anything with magic, basically.
But it's only in certain areas. Like, it's right. Certain spots around the world magic is possible, and the school exists in one of those zones.
Right. And anyone can use magic.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone. Including Kuzumi. Even though it's established that you can't use magic at the beginning. It's weird.
Essentially, he can't use magic because they ran out of shit for him to do. Like, they're just like, you just need a magic card to do magic. He's like, cool, can I get one? They're like,
no,
we can't make them anymore.
Why not? Because.
It takes a really long time, I guess.
Well, I can be patient and, you know, just wait. No.
You have
to use the fake card that you have with you, and you have to pretend to be super awesome with it, even though you can't use it for anything, because it's just... The only magic with the card that he's assigned is just, like, a guest pass card. Mm-hmm. But it has the appearance of a super awesome card, so he pretends to be a super awesome wizard, even though he can't use magic. Now, this premise of a guy who is completely normal in a magical world... We're actually going through something like that right now with Black Clover. And it's an interesting idea, because the guy has to pretend to not only be able to use magic, but to be better than all of his peers using magic, even though he has, presently, no magical capability. So, initially, going into this series, I thought this could be interesting, because there is a deceptive element to it, and he has to, you know, find a way to carry on the charade and so on and so forth. And it's not one of those things where he has to pretend to be in a relationship or pretend to hold a position. He has to actually pretend to do magical things. So there are a bunch of different moments where he is tested on various different things. And you know, the teacher who got involved with him at the start, Hiragi, is kind of forced to help him out, because if it turns out that a non-magical user got let into the school, it was his fault and he'll lose his job and so on and so forth. They're forced by circumstance to work together, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So he helps to cover for him and stuff like that. But as the series goes on, Kuzumi learns to do other stuff, and he gets abilities that change very, very quickly. All the time. I don't know where to begin, really, beyond the premise, honestly.
It's a weird sort of series, because... It's essentially a romantic comedy that has the setting of like a fantasy series, but it's not really a comedy, a romance, or an adventure series. It's sort of like a bard. It's a mixture of all of them, but doesn't really excel in any of them. This is a series we took on recommendation, generally because a lot of people have told us they've really enjoyed it. It was a series that they loved, a cult hit, essentially, and a series that ended much earlier than a lot of them wanted. It ran about 100 chapters in Jump.
Right around 2 years it lasted in Shonen Jump.
Yeah. And at that point, I'm like, okay, I'm glad that people enjoy this series. I have literally no clue why. And I don't mean that in, like, you know, to be mean. I don't blame somebody for enjoying this. But as a reader, there was nothing that I enjoyed in this series. And I don't mean, like, it was bad. There was just nothing to enjoy for me. It was essentially flipping through chapters and then going to the next page and being like, okay, that happens. It doesn't mean a whole lot, but it happens. And I kind of just flipped through it. And I think the problem that I had is the series has no stakes whatsoever. The entire concept of this school baffles me to this day. It's a school where these kids will go into it. And again, this world exists that there are magic points around the world where magic is possible. But outside those points, you can't just take the magic with you. It's restricted to those zones until, like, the very fucking end when they're, like, 12 people out of a class or something like that can carry the magic out of the school with them. But whatever, that's the very end. So the notion is that this school exists, you can practice magic in it. So all these kids go to practice magic. And the goal in it is if they, you know, are good enough at magic, they'll upgrade their card to a gold card, and then they get a wish. And I don't know if they ever really clarify if there's any limitations to what the wish can be. Like, the main wish we hear is
I think it's dependent on the strength of the student's card.
Yeah, but the female leads is to see her dead mother again, so
that's getting really...
Yeah, I'm like... I guess it has, like, fucking, you know, necromancy powers to it. But essentially, they can have this wish. And then, as soon as they have that, when you graduate from the school, they then erase your memory of all the, like, knowledge of magic, and you go out into the world. But not every student is going to get that wish. So there's an entire student body who are going to spend 4 years predominantly learning magic
can't use outside of particular parts of the world.
Can't use it outside the world. And at the end of it, they're going to have all knowledge of it erased, and then they're just going to be sent out into the world.
And these are high school kids who are doing this stuff instead of learning high school stuff.
And I'm just like, what is the point of this school? What do you guys do here?
And how does the school exist? what economy fuels this school? What reason is there for it? How does it get funding? Like, its only purpose is to create these wishes, because it's not pumping out... It's a magical high school. I'm going to make comparisons to Hogwarts in Harry Potter, okay? The whole point of the wizarding world in Harry Potter is that there's this alternate world where there is an economy, and people do these things, and they have to use magic constantly in their lives in order to do this stuff, and there's a system of government, and there are banks, and there are, you know, entire markets and economy and stuff like that. All that stuff fuels into itself, so it makes sense that you would have schools around the world to produce people fitted to that, you know, alternate world, the same way that we have schools to prepare people to, you know, become productive members of society. They have schools that prepare people for a magical society and stuff like that.
Yes. Absolutely, makes 100% sense.
Well, as much as...
as much as fucking goblins or gnomes running banks can.
Exactly. This takes away the entire world that makes having those schools make sense in. What is the purpose of creating mages if they're not going to use their mage skills for anything? Are they just going to go back into the normal world, which they will be horrendously unprepared for? I don't get it. And it seems like the only thing that, you know, allows for a career path is to become a teacher at the school.
Yeah, I was like, because it's like, what's the directive at this school? Like, what are they intending these kids do? Because as at the end, they introduce the concept of like a black card or something like that. That the idea is that is that the card generates its own field essentially, so you can use magic outside of the school.
Why doesn't everyone do this?
Well, I'm just like, even if you say you want to limit it to just a few people, I'm like, what do these people do with it still? Like, do these people use the magic to help the world? Are they controlling things? Like, it comes so late in the series. Like, it's as the series is being canceled, basically it's like a 3-chapter lead up to its end, where it gets, like, introduced, just like, there's a black card for some people to get. And, like, okay, if you're going to do that, like, you're going to have these people go for that, that's fine. But it's like a dozen students out of an entire class. Like, the rest of them, like, all right, let's say 50% of, like, maybe, like, 120 kids get a gold card and get to have a wish granted. That's still fucking 60 kids that are just going to have their memories erased, and they're just going to go out into the world and just be like, man, I'm really behind in fucking English and science. This is ridiculous.
And the way that the premise of the series is supposed to go is, you know, Kazumi is supposed to be going through all this stuff while not being able to use magic. So the main challenge that comes up is occasionally there are these, like, magical assessments that come up where mm-hmm. they're tasked with doing something. And so it's like, you know, we're going to see if you can, you know, use magic to solve this problem. So Kazumi has to basically fake his way through it. And once he's done that, it's like, okay, I'm safe until the next one. Are there no conceptual courses in this class?
No, there's just midterms.
Apparently there is no written or oral or anything, and you shouldn't even be holding lectures in the class. You just be telling them to constantly practice their magic, and that's it. Like, having one-on-one instruction to do the practical portion of it. But they're not. They're having, like, lectures and classes and stuff like that. And Kazumi is apparently absorbing none of this, because why would he, you know, need to? He's not going to be able to use it anyway, because the card don't work and stuff like that. What's the point if all you're being assessed on is those practical portions? You could do stuff, you know, just kind of by flying through on the seat of your pants the way, you know, Kazumi does, not knowing what you're supposed to be doing, just because there's no assessments, apparently.
And we're harping on the magic aspect of this, because it's the entire premise of this school. You know, it's a magic school, and all this comes back to the fact that, I forgot his name too, Kazumi has a crush on Hiragi. He wants to date her, he wants to have feelings
for her. There's two Hiragis, by the way.
Oh, sorry. Aika.
Hiragi the teacher, it turns out his daughter is the girl that Kazumi has a crush on.
And the thing is that if he gets thrown out of this school, they're going to erase his memories, and the only knowledge he has of Aika is from this school. So to keep his memories of her, he needs to keep attending this school. And that becomes his motivation. Eventually, he wants to become a powerful wizard so that he can use his wish to grant her wish. Because
she couldn't do that herself.
Yeah.
Because she's a woman.
Because she's apparently incapable of doing it.
Because she's the love interest in a bland harem series.
As he determines after about 2 weeks of freshman high school. But that's what I mean when I say the series is like a comedy romance for part of it. Because that's essentially what the plot is supposed to be, is Kazumi wants to date Aika. He wants to share his feelings with her, but he has to constantly keep, you know, protecting his identity so he doesn't get thrown out of the school. And sometimes it does manifest its way in some kind of humorous situations. In fact, I thought what people really liked about this early on was that the series kind of had a very crude sense of humor at the start. Like, there's one bit I actually really did like right towards the start, is they're in, like, an herbology class, and they're learning about mandrakes.
Oh, God.
And they're like, yes, when you pull it out, the mandrake will take the shape of a human body and try to enchant you. But don't worry, as long as you have magic, you will not be fooled by it, so don't worry, just grind the herb. So, you know, Kazumi pulls it out, but at that point he has no magic, so he just sees this, like, adorable girl who's just like, please don't crush me! And he's just like, don't worry, I'll save you. And fucking Aika's just like, what? Give me that. grind us up, you're wasting our time. So it's just this, like, bloody splatter that he sees of this poor girl being mangled, and everyone's like, it's just a root.
Kazumi is, like, crying, and it turns out that this is a fucking plot point later. Turns out that because he doesn't have magic, Kazumi is the only one who can befriend the mandrakes, who it turns out are sentient, and everyone in the school is fucking murderers.
But it doesn't matter, because she just becomes a fucking Navi anyway, so...
Oh, God. Let's talk about some of the ways that Kazumi's powers change in this series. He starts off with the gold card, which isn't really a gold card. It's not really super powerful. It has no powers. But then, he loses it, and he's told, you're in super big trouble because you lost it. But it wasn't his fault that he lost it. It was stolen. And actually, the principal was just fucking with him. And she's like, by the way, we actually have this card that you can use. I don't know why we didn't give it to you at the start of the series. The series is called M0, and we didn't give you the M0 card until this point. Freaking 12 chapters in, but here, it doesn't have any magical powers, except it can negate magic sometimes, but if you do that, then you drop the chances of being able to turn into a gold card at the end of the series, and since that's your eventual goal, you don't want to do that too much, so it's like having no card, although in very exceptional situations, it's like having a super awesome card because you can negate magic and stuff, and then later on, he finds this mandrake because he cried for the one mandrake in class, she befriends him, and she's Lucy, and she's like, I will help you guide you through this one situation that you're in. And then at the end of the course, it comes across this ring, but Lucy gets the ring instead, so she gets super awesome magic powers, and she follows him around while she's invisible. Nobody can see her except for Kazumi. So now he's got an invisible helper, who gives him another exceptional power. And then at the end of the series, he finds a black card, which lets him use the magic spells of other students. And oh my god, stop changing the status quo over and over and over again!
Yeah, and to note again, this is a series that only ran for less than 100 chapters, so it's a lot of changes that kind of happen relatively quickly. But it's weird because having read it, it felt like the longest series in the world. And I feel bad because I really busted my nut on that Mandrake story about complimentary things to say about MXO, because I have everything else in this series is just bland to me. And I managed to get through, there's an arc about halfway through the series, I forget the name of it, at one point they're just having a school festival, or not a school festival, like a school test between the different classes, and it's this really convoluted, like, spy game. It's just like,
the rules of this.
It's like, arc begins, page one, here's all of the rules, and you're just like, what? What's happening? Just like,
different students have different positions, and they earn and lose points, because, like, every student has this, like, paintball and a necklace around their neck, and you eliminate someone by bursting their paintball, but depending on the positions you have, you can actually lose points by eliminating certain students, so there are students you don't actually want to take out of the competition, but it doesn't matter any of that anyway, because the eventual goal is always the same, is you want to eliminate the king, who is the guy who's been assigned with the goofy crown. That's the ultimate goal. Who cares about all the other stuff? That's just to tell you that certain students are doing individually well.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, yeah, but I know that Kazumi's not going to fail. None of the individual students are going to fail, so it just comes down to, do they win or not? And oh look, there's the king. Okay, I don't care about any of the action.
Yeah, and I got to the end of that, and at that point I was just like, I can't, like, there's just nothing is changing at this point. I've gone through half of this series, everything's fine, and I just kind of skipped around from there.
Well, the problem is, we rag on about the premise and how the whole concept of the school makes no sense. I think that the characters in this series are just not interesting, in the slightest.
They're either not interesting, weirdly used, or just outright awful.
Kazumi is confusing, first of all. I do not know what type of character he's supposed to be, other than fucking perfect. Because it starts off, he has no magical power because of the lack of the card. He's very simple-minded and straightforward, which is how he got in the situation in the first place, which was he was just super stubborn. And so he gets into these situations, it's established in kind of a throwaway line that he's an experienced fighter because he would, like, defend people from being bullied. So it sort of makes sense that he's able to endure a lot of the stuff that's thrown at him despite not having any magic. He's just hard-bodied, so he takes the attacks. And then eventually... Actually, I liked him early on because he would just fucking punch these guys after, you know, taking their zappy attacks, basically. I liked that at the start. You know, he just goes up to someone after they've summoned all these weird wires or thunderstorms or something, and he just punches them until they stop. But then after that comes in the deception part of it, because he's got to pretend to have superpowers, and so he puts on this act as this super arrogant guy who knows everything, and everyone buys into the act, even though he acts like a complete klutz when he's not deliberately putting on the act, and he looks like a complete fuck-up. Then later on, he becomes this tremendous mastermind, but only when it's convenient for the plot, because he'll have these tremendous bluffing exchanges, which no one ever calls him on. And he keeps on getting out of this stuff because he just happens to have the one set of tools necessary in order to fool somebody. No one ever apparently gets mad enough to actually not buy into his act and then screw him. Like, nothing bad seems to actually happen to the guy, except when he accidentally does something to upset Aika, whose character is being upset at Kazumi and forgiving him.
Yeah, there's this weird tone early on where it's essentially like the misunderstandings keep happening. Like, oh, I accidentally touched your boob. Or, oh, we were locked in a room and you thought I was going to try to force myself on you. But I wasn't. I was just trying to, like, you know, climb up this wall or something like that. And she'll keep being like, oh, I hate you. You're a monster. And then afterwards she's like, I guess you're not such a bad guy after all.
But then everyone thinks he's fucking perfect. Because he always will have this grand speech where he'll just immediately rattle off the exact right thing to make any female who listens to him melt at his enchanting complimentary words. And just everyone buys into everything that he ever does. And it's just not interesting. There's no tension. Like, nothing, I don't think anything bad could ever happen to the guy, even though he's supposedly in this incredibly tense situation where he could be kicked out of school at the drop of a hat. It's very contradictory.
And again, there's just no real stakes at it, because even if he does get kicked out, like, the stake is, oh, he won't get to hang out with Aika anymore. And you're like, I'd have to imagine, even if that happened at this point, they probably, like, the people in the school, well, I guess maybe it'll erase their memory of him, too.
Yeah.
But even then, it's still just, like, it's just not that compelling. He's just not, there's just not enough to him to make him compelling. He has an interesting personality to a certain extent, but like I said, he's just too perfect. Which is fine in the sense that it's a comedy series, I suppose, but it gets kind of boring real quick.
Well, if it were actually more of a comedy series, it would definitely be more acceptable.
Yeah. Again, this is a bard of a series. It has all these different traits, but just doesn't excel at any of them.
It really just seems to spread itself too thin in every single respect. And so you've got the, you know, switching premises or switching dynamics, I guess, because of Kazumi's changing powers. And you've got inability to decide if something is going to be a big action scene or if it's just going to be played for laughs. And in the end, yeah, like, a lot of stuff happens. Occasionally, I think that there are some good ideas in the series. I like the idea of having very weird sort of tasks for the students to go through. But some of them are very overly simple. Some of them are kind of goofy. The whole human chess thing was confusing, and I didn't really understand what the point of it was. Oh, God.
Why would anyone agree to become a defender in that? That role sucks. You can't get points.
You can't get any points.
All you do is cost points. It's so worthless.
What was that one guy's name?
Give me a defining trait about him.
Pervert.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's the person I wanted to talk about next. Kairu is awful. He is 100% the most awful thing in this series and a fucking mistake from the moment he's introduced until every stupid chapter he shows up in, does something perverted, and everyone just laughs it off. He is a fucking asshole. There is nothing redeeming about his character, but he's still part of the main five character group that keeps, you know, persisting throughout this series. I don't get it.
Their main five is like Kazumi, Aika, Aika's two friends, one who is a very physical girl, one who has like a dark sense of humor, and she's like obsessed with video games, which is an interesting sort of quirk for a wizarding series. And then Kaoru, who's just a pervert.
That's his only character trait. He's constantly molesting girls or trying to peek on them. And that's the one thing we haven't gotten into. This is like trying to be an ecchi series, but it's not titillating in any way. Like, it's constantly trying to put these girls in suggestive positions, at least early on. I think it lightens up a little bit more toward as the series goes on. But there's a lot of points where you're like, oh, hey, this girl's butt's being thrusted towards the page, but you won't, like, it just doesn't want to go the actual extra mile of, like, here's a panty shot. It's just this weird mix between them. But Kaoru exists to just slap girls, like, just grab their butts, or to, like, land on their boobs, or just nonstop sexual jokes. And it's not like there's a character behind it. We're introduced to him as this kid who wants to, like, get stronger.
You know, because he's got an inferiority complex with his older brother.
Yeah, and that's introduced in like one chapter, and then everything else from then on is Kaoru is renowned across the school. He's infamous for being a fucking disgusting, creepy pervert.
The fact that this guy hasn't been kicked out is amazing.
You're just like, why does anybody hang out with him? There's nothing redeeming to him.
Like every, you know, harem series seems to have that one character who is just a complete pervert. And a lot of the times it's just like, you know, they're played as this tremendously annoying, unlikable person, or they have an alternate purpose. And, you know, like in Nisekoi, Shu is the pervert character, but he is also observant and wise, and he does, when he, you know, kind of stops being a pervert, act like a very good friend that a lot of people confide in. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of purpose to him. And Kaoru's got none of that. Like, there's one set of early tests that they go through where, like, the first one is, you know, the five of them are sent into individual rooms, and they're like, you know, oh, they must resist the temptation of, you know, experiencing their greatest pleasure in there. And so, like, Kazumi's thing is that, Aika's in there, and she is actually in love with him and wants to be with him and stuff like that, and he managed to resist the temptation because he remembers that he's got to take the tests and stuff. Aika's thing is a joke on the fact that she likes really bad jokes and stuff. And then, of course, Kaoru's is that he's just surrounded by a harem of women.
Yeah, just scantily clad women who want nothing but to please him.
And does he pass? No. His classmates have to go in and pull him out.
And yet he still gets credit for it, too. I'm like, I understand there were kind of nebulous rules to this to begin with, but how the fuck does this count as a pass? He was dragged kicking and screaming out of that room, and you're still going to be like, good job.
Aika had to be retrieved from her room, too.
Yeah.
But she was like, no, I must hear more of the stupid jokes. She was just like, okay, yeah, let's go. And then, right after that, they have to immediately take a second test, which is their bodies are like split into two smaller halves. Mm-hmm. They're split into two smaller versions of themselves.
Like a chibi version of themselves in a duplicate.
And then they have to, one of their halves is running away from them, and so they have to reunite, basically. And so a lot of it becomes teamwork because, you know, if you're just chasing yourself around, you're not going to catch them. But if you team up, then it works out. And Kazumi ends up doing a lot of stuff. And there are a few cool moments here and there where they come up with these, interesting ways to approach the situation. And then Kaoru is the last one. They just think to themselves, how are we going to find Kaoru? Well, where would Kaoru be? He would be perving on the girls, of course. And they find him there because he's, like, looking up skirts.
Yeah.
It's like, two in a row, where it's just like, he is a pervert, and he wants to see girls' panties and boobs.
And they still hang out with them afterwards. I just don't get it. Like, it's not Look, I know there are some characters out there who have that, like, kind of, like, voyeuristic character trait to them. And sometimes they work if you can make them, like, charming in a way. Like, early Sanji had it a little bit, where you're like, all right, you're, like...
He still has it.
Yeah, sometimes I think Oda goes a little over the top recently. But in general, I'm just like, if you make it charming and not really, really creepy, it's fine. But there's nothing redeeming about Karu. He just wants to check out chicks. And no... All the girls hate him. No one likes him. Why do they keep hanging out with him in your stupid school where no one is going to learn anything and he's just going to be sent out in 4 years with the only knowledge he obtained from this school was how many fucking vaginas he saw? It's so fucking stupid.
Actually, maybe it's a good thing that he doesn't ever learn his lesson, because then he'd just forget it and go on to the world and do the same thing.
I'm glad he never gets a gold card, because God forbid what his fucking wish would be. God. Oh, man, he was just such an annoying character.
That's the thing, and the end of it all, is that if the characters had been more likable or more interesting, I would have much more easily forgiven the way that the rules change, the fact that the school makes no sense and all that stuff. I'm just not actually... I don't like any of the characters. I dislike one. And all the others I just don't care about. So, I didn't like this series because I wasn't interested in the characters and wasn't interested in the story. That's all it comes down to.
Yeah, I want to say I can see why people enjoy it, but I really can't. But I am going to say, if you enjoy it, I'm really not trying to be the shitty turret on your parade. I don't think this is a bad series. I just don't enjoy it at all. And I maybe it just doesn't hit my taste. Maybe I just don't see why people like it. And like, if I just got it, then maybe I'd enjoy it more. But I didn't. Every aspect of this was just... like a chore to kind of get through. And I apologize again, because I feel bad. A lot of people sent this in to us because they liked it, but I mean, my honest opinion is I can't recommend it to anybody. I don't see what in it people would really latch onto as being this, you know, really enjoyable aspect.
What'd you think about Lucy?
She was an Navi. That's the only thing I really thought about her. She was another...
I don't think she was near...
She's not as annoying as Navi, but she's just she's this floating thing that follows around him to assist him in these situations. She just seemed kind of weird and unnecessary to me. And I kind of had a bad intention of her because the arc she was introduced in is the same one that also had the tentacle monster in it, so...
Let's talk about that for a minute. That was the single creepiest moment in this whole series for me.
Again, it's not like a fan service series that much. It never gets that weird.
Well, the idea of the creature that does this, basically, Kazumi has to go into this cave, and that's where he ends up finding Lucy the Mandrake. Right after like he finds her, one of the girls he went to the cave with, I've forgotten her name, I don't care. She gets attacked by this creature that basically swallows a person and then produces a copy of them to then lure other people in so that it can feast on them too. It's actually a pretty terrifying idea for a monster. And so it's like, okay, yeah, you know, you hear about that. It's like, all right, fine. The way that it swallows her is it sends out these kind of liquidy tentacles, which creep under her clothing and wrap all around her, and her body is portrayed in the images where this is happening as being naked anyway.
Mm-hmm. It's very sexual, and you're just like, you know, if this were Tula Vru, I'd expect this. It's just so jolly.
That happens in Tula Vru.
It happens in like chapter 2 of Tula Vru.
That happens in chapters 222.
But it's just like, it's so jarring here because it's got fan service to it, but it's just like the lightest, like, unless thigh high stockings and short skirts are all you need to the fucking pop it, then I mean, good for you. But otherwise, it's just like, why are you doing this? Like, there's no advantage to drawing the sexual positions like this. But then there's just that one random tentacle monster scene where you're just like, okay, do you want to knock something out here? author, or what's going on?
This is my Hulk scene, obviously.
Yeah, he's just like, Hulk needs something to jerk off to. It's gonna be this.
Oh, God.
Any other thoughts on it, Nick? Or we want to wrap this up to get to our 20 fucking manga series this week?
We have so much to go through. I promise I'm going to try my hardest on a lot of series to go through them as quickly as possible. We so many to get through. Let's do this. Can't really recommend M0, but if you like it, you like it. I don't know. Alright. Black Clover, I think we start with?
Yep.
Alright, last time Asta took the test, the guy was a douche to him. He took out his sword and he hit him. And he won the sparring. Page 3, Road to the Wizard? Road to the Wizard King.
The Wizard School!
Wizard King! So,
oh, man, I would really like to read a lizard manga right now.
So, Asta did something, and there's a whole lot of anonymous onlookers. What do you think they do?
I bet they all criticize him.
He's a peasant from the boonies. He's such a stupid fool. You give up. So, this goes on for a bit, until eventually some dude comes up to Yuno and is like, why don't I show you the magical powers of a noble, you loathed peasant from the boondocks? And Yuno summons this fucking tornado that blows him away. Okay, if this series is nothing but people being idiots and then Asta and Yuno kicking their asses, I think that I might get into it.
It should be like just a wacky comedy at that point.
There is no actual Road to the Wizard King. There is no huge battle series behind this. It's just people being douches to these two characters and them kicking their ass.
To these two characters who have pretty effectively proven themselves thus far. People are still like,
I have done nothing to piss them off.
They came from the boonies. And no one can be good if they come to
You're poor.
Oh no, I'm getting my ass kicked now.
So, basically the test ends. They call forward the different applicants, and this set of guys vote on, the captains for the squads, you know, like, vote on who passes and who fails and stuff like that. I believe that it is essentially, I guess the way it works is that if a captain says, raises their hand, it's like, yeah, I want you to join my squad. And then, of course, the applicant is allowed to choose between the squads that approve him. So, Yuno gets everybody, because he's awesome and he's got the four-leaf clover and stuff. So he's always like, I will join the Golden Dawn then. And they're like, oh, man. And so Asta's like, I can't let Yuno get ahead of me. And he steps forward, and fucking no one raised their hand. And I was like, oh. But then this one captain steps forward and he's like, I'm not surprised, because it doesn't matter how high your combat skills are. If it's based on suspicious powers, no one will want a part of it. The most important thing about Magic Knight is his or her magical powers. So, the guy's like, you know, this is the harsh reality. You don't actually have any magical powers, so nothing's going to happen. You can't progress this way. But, so Asta says, even if I can't join the Magic Knights today, no matter how many times I fall, no matter what anyone says, one day I will become the Wizard King. And, of course, Yuno's like, yeah, that's Asta for you, just smiling to himself. And then there's other guys like, he's dreaming! That stupid pumpkin! You think about
it? It is like 90% of this series. I feel like we've read the same chapter 3 weeks in a row.
Just with, like, different characters to break it up, basically.
Yeah, like, someone doesn't think fucking Asta can make a difference. Asta tells him he'll become the Wizard King. Yuno smiles and says, yeah.
Yeah, you tell him, Asta, you're my friend and rival. Fortunately, this guy, who kind of is like, you know, this is the way things are, says, hey, you're pretty interesting. Join the Black Bulls! And Asta's like, well, really? Yes, and you can't refuse. He's just, like, looming over him. He says, I will make you have such a horrible time in the Black Bulls that you will be ripped to pieces, so be ready for it. And one day, prove everyone wrong and become the Wizard King. I like this guy. Because, just cuts through all the bullshit. He's like, alright, I'll give you a chance. Prove it. Prove yourself. Yeah. So, Asta's like, yeah, okay, I'll do that. And he forgot about this part of the chapter. He goes to take a shit. A quarter of this chapter is Asta's shit-taking adventure. So, the guy who he beats in the sparring session follows into the bathrooms and summons a poison lizard to go attack... to go attack him while he's taking a shit. But Yuno appears and he uses his wind magic to summon this hawk to crush the lizard. And he's like, "You get out of here. You are way beneath Asta." And the guy's like, "I gotta go, bye." Because he's afraid of Yuno. Asta comes out and he's like, "Oh, that was a good shit. Oh yeah, that was a good shit." Captain of the Black Bulls is like, "What the fuck were you doing that took so long?" And he's like, "It was a huge crap! It was this big!"
I actually kind of like his one quote. He's like, "I have no regrets or poop left in me." And I'm just like, I almost feel like Black Clover is the weekly manga recap of manga, where you're just like, so goofy and just doesn't give a fuck at this point. Do you want me to sum up the rest of the chapter for you real quick, Nick?
Go ahead.
Asta joins Fairy Tail.
Basically. They go to the headquarters of the Black Bulls, because Yami, the smoking captain guy, he's got another guy with him who used teleportation magic. They go there, and Asta's like, "Oh man, what's going on here?" An explosion breaks out because everyone inside of the headquarters is a weirdo. And there is a guy who, like, keeps on looking over his, like, goes, like, full 180 to turn around and tell people to shut up while he's reading. There's, like, a giant guy in the background. There's, this guy's playing baseball, it looks like. And then there is...
very prominently, a naked woman. A nearly naked woman who is clearly hungover.
And, so Yami says, "Welcome to the absolute worst Magic Knight squad, the Black Bulls." So, Asta's adventures continue with all the other misfits, it seems. Honestly, out of all the chapters of Black Clover, I think this was probably my favorite, because it was different from the other two, basically.
I didn't mind it. I've kind of had the same thought on Black Clover since the beginning. I feel like it's, if any series of this is going to have any chance, let alone get picked up, but any chance of having a successful run and jump, it's probably going to be Black Clover. And to that regard, I'm not going to be upset if it gets picked up. I prefer it not to, just because our recaps are long enough already and we don't need another one to add.
Just none of the four, please.
Yeah, I was like, but anyway, I don't think it's going to last. Maybe it will. I don't think it will. If it does, I'm not going to be upset, but it needs to basically world trigger me. Like, it needs to 20 chapters and just do something. I'm just like, oh, okay, there's more to this than just what we're getting right here. I think my issue right now is just like, I like series with growth to them, and like, the magic in this series just feels very arbitrary. Like, just Asta can seemingly just do whatever related to wind magic. I'm just like, is there limits to it? You know, like, I think Zatch Bell, where it's like, you know, spells were learned in time and, you know, directly related to personal growth. And I'm just like, he just fucking made an eagle out of fire, or an owl out of wind. What does this kid not do? But, we got Bleach, Nick.
I can't actually find the chapter title in this
chapter. It's Return of the God. There was a cover page to Bleach this week, and it was on the cover page.
I meant to skip over that. There it is, yeah. Okay, no wonder I missed that. Alright. So, this chapter... no final words from any of his friends. You can complete the ritual. Ah!
It's like three straight pages of him being like, "This hurts!"
Like, black energy pouring out of his eyes, his mouth, and his nose, straight up into the air. Huge black arm reaches into the heavens, and so they're like, "Oh wow, tremoring stopped."
"Good job, Ukitake." Oh, he's dead. Never mind.
Oh god. So, very strangely, Juhak is like, "What happened? What is that?" Because the arm has just basically surrounded Rayo's amber crystal thing and is holding the two halves, not together, but near each other. So, he's like, the fact that it doesn't reflect on my eye means you are Rayo. Why is Rayo's own right arm getting in the way? Okay.
I don't know why you'd think that would be like, what are you doing? Right arm of the body of the person I'm trying to kill? How dare you interfere? I thought you two were on the outs. I saw your Facebook status. It said it's complicated. That should mean that you two don't want to get along.
Oh, God. I like how it's just like, oh, yes, my all-seeing, all-aware power, except when I don't see it.
Except when it pertains to God, I guess.
Just as our Orihime can intrude into the realm of God, except when she tries to intrude into the realm of God.
Like, I could cut you and see that I was going to cut you and kill you, but I could not foresee that your hand would come back. There's a very distinct difference.
For some reason, I foresaw you dying, but then you did not die. So, how do people react to Ukitake's death? Well, Xintaro, that's his name, he goes, Captain. And Rukia goes, Captain Ukitake! Because she has an exclamation point, so she is a little bit more upset than Xintaro is. Kyone don't say shit.
She's super, super sad.
She might be moping in the background, I don't know. And then Soifon is just like, so how long is this going to last? Because, you know, we don't know how long this is actually going to last. I mean, what if it ends when Ukitake dies? And so Omaeda's like, Captain, you shouldn't be saying that. Because Centaur's like, how dare you insult my captain?
Like, look, to be fair, dude, this dude is giving his life, and while he's doing it, it's the only thing that's holding fucking reality together. So if you'll forgive me if I try to, you know, talk logistics on this for a quick fucking moment. Is he going to last long, or is he fucking gonna puss out? I just want to know.
By the way, Centauro is missing his beard in one of the panels. Like,
oh yeah.
I'm just looking across this page, and you see it very clear in one panel, and then further down it's like, where the fuck did he go?
What you don't see is in between the panels he rips off his beard in solidarity for his captain.
When he gets really pissed off at someone, his beard retreats into his chin.
He's just like, Captain said he always liked me with the beard, but now he's gone, I'll leave it for him forever. Just rips it off, drops it on him.
So Urahara says, oh, this is the first time I've ever heard of or seen Kamikake, so I have no idea how long it's going to last, so let's hurry up and, you know, make the gate and head to Ryokyu. And they're like, all right, yeah, let's do this. Meanwhile, Shinsui, who went to go and see Aizen, is like, oh, you're not answering me. Are you against communication using spiritual pressure, or are you unable to do it here? Well, I brought the keys to breaking your seal. I've been allowed to use 3 of them. So I will undo the mouth seal so we can talk. But then let's cut away immediately after that.
I kept thinking that it was like him undoing the mouth seal that caused the gate to break at first. But I was like, well, that doesn't make sense. And it's right, it doesn't make sense. It's just weirdly positioned. So the panel of him saying, I'll undo the mouth seal, is on a separate page where the rest of the page then immediately goes back to the fucking gate the storyline. Like, you want to... Do you want to shorten one of those panels of fucking Ukitake screaming to death, and you could just fit that mouth panel on the previous page?
So Urahara tries to summon the gate, but it's not appearing, and it was like, what's going on? And then I was like, there is not enough spiritual pressure. Why? And then I says, well, Ukitake has had to always sustain his debilitated body with his spiritual pressure. Because of that, no other captain's energy level comes close to his. Now that he's gone, we don't have enough spiritual pressure to create the gate. Ukitake was super awesome, you guys. Seriously.
Is this going to be like fucking Sasekibe, where after his death everyone's like...
Well, it's not as bad as Sasekibe. Yeah. Because Ukitake talked before.
But it's still just going to be like... Is that going to be like the new trend in Bleach? Like, he died. What a great person he was after it. Let's all remember how great he was.
He was super awesome, you guys. We swear.
You don't remember it. You didn't get to see it. But he told all... The things he did, they were incredible.
I understand, you know, the idea is like, oh, you know, like a lesser person, a less powerful person would have died from his super awful illness way before. That's the idea behind it, I guess. But it's very convenient that's like, oh, by the way, he was super strong.
Nick, that's not convenient. Two okay. pages later right. is convenience.
So, first of all, Yanamaru kind of steps in, and it's one of those things where it's like, she calms Nanao down because they knew each other a long time ago, I guess. Because
they're fucking twins.
Yeah. Even though she's supposedly way older, but, you know, weird ghost age thing. Yeah, anyway, she's like, calm down. Basically. And then all of the Vice are like, we put on the robes! For some reason.
It's important.
It's totally important. Gotta have matching outfits. And Mario's like, I'm not wearing one, though. Shut up.
I'm wearing my big sun cloak. Whee!
So he comes in, and he's like, what are you guys doing in my lab? And Uehara's like, oh, you're here. He's like, oh, you're using your spiritual brush to create the gate. Well, if you needed a huge amount of spiritual pressure, why didn't you just use this spiritual pressure amplifier?
I just wonder, Uehara, if they think, I fucking hate you so much, Mairi. I fucking hate everything about you.
He's like, oh no, look, see, it's been completely obvious the whole time. He's like raising a sign over it that says spiritual pressure amplifier.
And he's like, didn't you just think to open the computer and see if my spiritual pressure amplifier was hidden behind it? I thought you were the scientist.
So they start to make the gate. They're like, oh, we can go now. Now we cut back to Shunsui and Aizen. And so Shunsui is like, alright, I have released the mouth seal as established 3 pages ago. So anyway, now you should be able to respond verbally. I don't know why you weren't talking with me with your spiritual pressure, but I don't know. You know, you haven't been able to use your mouth for like 2 years, right? So maybe you won't even be able to talk. Oh, why are you talking to yourself, Shunsui? So then Aizen is just like, you're right. Shunsui's like, I only removed the seal in his mouth. How did he remove the other seals? And Aizen's like, didn't you remember, Shunsui? I'm broken as shit.
Guess who's back?
Back again. But Aizen does kind of say a kind of cool line, which is like, what's the matter? You still had 2 more keys you're going to use, right? So,
alright, here's the thing, Nick. I'm super fucking pumped about Aizen coming back.
Now stuff is going to happen, basically.
Stuff's going to happen, and it's going to be ridiculous. Like, we may get 20 chapters of Deicide again, for all I know, but I feel like something hilarious is going to come out of this. I'm like kind of just like, I'm like almost like giddy, like, oh man, Aizen's back. Like, it's a character we shit on all the time. But I'm just like, he's back in the series. He's gonna do shit, and he's already fucking ridiculous.
I don't even know why Shunsui is surprised. Why would even the readers be surprised? We saw Aizen talking with Juhabak, you know, a couple of years ago. It seemed like he was completely unsealed and stuff like that. He's got absolute freaking illusion control. He could have just said, like, oh, you're gonna put me in these super awesome ultra seals thing. Oh, I guess you put them on me.
Like, yes. Even when I was just thinking, I was like, it's not like his hypnotism power ends. I mean, just the fact that he's now able to talk, all he needs to say is like, oh, hey, I'm just going to manifest myself walking towards you soon. So, like, that's what I just assume this is, possibly, just an illusion.
Because he's capable of doing it against you, Havok.
Yeah, like, we know that he can do that.
The only
person
we know he can't do it to is Ichigo.
Mm-hmm. And if you're completely blind. But once you've seen it, you're fucked. So, right. We know Shunsui's
at it. You only need to see him ever release his Shikai, and then from that point onward, he can just basically do whatever he wants and make you see whatever he wants. So, nothing he does should ever be a surprise, basically.
I'm so pumped that he's back, because I know, like, if the next 8 chapters aren't just Aizen fucking up shit, I'm gonna be so, like, if next week starts and we fucking open with fucking Ganju, I'm gonna be so pissed. I'm like, fucking get this asshole out of here. We got Aizen here.
We finally are told why Grimmjow showed up. It's like, no, don't care anymore.
Yeah, it opens with Grimmjow and Shukishima be like doing their fucking battle plans to invade the fucking Soul King Palace. I'm just like, get the fuck out of here. Put Aizen on screen. They got no time to care about these bit characters.
Oh, Aizen, I know I hated you, but I had no idea Bleach could be this terrible without you.
You were a delicious kind of terrible.
Oh, okay. That's that. Move on. Fairy Tale.
No, Cyborg Rogi Neck, I'm sorry.
Ah, how could I forget?
I'm sorry.
Cyborg Rocky, Chapter 2, wherever the hell it was called. Okay, so is this better than the last chapter? I think. But, okay, he helped another kid out. A kid whose sister was, like, helping Mob grows out, and she is, like, an awesome doctor or something like that who specializes in augmentations. And he's like, how much older is your sister? He's like, shows the picture. He's like, oh, wow, hot doctor. Guess I'll go save her. Shows up, beats up people, and is like, okay, I'm here to save you. No, I volunteered to be here. Kid shows up. Did you really want to be here? Actually just wants to get money so that she can take care of her kid brother. Rocky is like, okay, I'll be with this guy now. Beats him up, saves the girl, and is just like, no, you don't need to pay me. Just make sure to get her phone number so we can hit on her later, which is like, okay, you know.
That was kind of funny.
Like fair said, fucks, yeah. I'll be paid by getting your number. Good stuff. And then he, like, transfers a whole bunch of money from the guy he beat up to her so that they won't be strapped for cash. Anyway, so overall, pretty good. Just not very, like, in the mood for recapping in detail.
Basically. Okay. So, Fairy Tale, chapter...
422.
Oh, hold on. That's how I got to last week's chapter. 422.
So you know how the last couple of weeks we've been talking, it's like, okay, you know, Carla has, you know, human form, but she's not, like, sexualized or anything. Didn't take long.
Chapter 422, Orochi's Fin, and the cover page is Carla in her human form with the line, human males are so simple-minded. The minute I take a human form, they all try to chat me up. And she's saying this while laying in a chair in a dress with stockings as she's holding a teddy bear. It's the creepiest. Oh, well, yeah, it's a stuffed animal. It's with like a glass of wine. It's the creepiest, like, lowly setup fan servicing I think I've ever seen.
It's like if Sharia and Wendy tried enticing, basically.
It's even creepier to me because she's holding the stuffed animal. Like, that just... It's like you might as well fucking have her talking like...
a little girl come to bed with me.
Yeah, like, it's like you might as well have her fucking talk like a rugrat while she's there. Like, oh, let's go to the Starquest, Wayne. Like, it's just like... to go away. But no, don't worry, Nick. This chapter is far more respectable than that sleazy cover page. Because we then see the Sky Sisters flying into the air, and they dive down into combat. And of course, because they're jumping down to kick people in the face, their skirts blow up, and they get panty shots. But then they team up for super awesome, like, wind spiral attack, and they knock people away. And then Carla shows up so she can kick people, but she does it from this really weird position where you see right up her skirt, and you can see her underwear, which is weird. Again, why? I thought she wore pants before. What happened? But then... Oh, fuck. I just saw it and it just boggled my mind and I lost all my place. Sarah's like, we gotta go defeat the master of this guy. So they're going off to find him. But Wendy picks up a particular familiar scent. We cut away and Natsu's like, we're gonna go after them. So he and Lucy head on after, and he beats up a whole bunch of monsters along the way because he's Natsu and he's awesome. And then Lucy's like, I'm gonna help too. So she summons Loki, and Loki comes up, and then she unveils a new power, star dress, Leo form, and she takes on a new outfit that seems to be based off of Loki's, and it seems that her new stellar spirit magic basically allows her to bond with her stellar spirits to gain part of their power in hers.
And the first thing she does with this power is played for a joke for some reason.
Yeah, it's weird, because she's like in this new dress now, and she's like, this means I can enter the fight myself, which is a pretty big moment for her. I mean, she's always been characterized as...
Yeah, it's a big deal. You know, it changes the way that Lucy does stuff, and it is implied that she is, like, way more powerful now.
Yeah, you're taking the Pokemon trainer and you're actually putting them in the field of battle. It's kind of a cool thing. But then the character behind him is just like, you're gonna fight in a dress? And be like, bitch, she fights in a bikini.
She's Lucy.
She fights in, like, miniskirts in a bikini. The Sky Sisters are fighting in miniskirts. What do you care if she's fighting in a dress?
If anything, that dress is designed for her to fight because it is incredibly loose and gives her legs plenty of room to move about.
Hell, that might be one of the most conservative outfits Lucy's ever worn in a fight. Why are you complaining?
Have you seen some of the things Urza has fought in?
Well, they even note that. They're like, is it like Urza's magic? She's like, not really. It's less skanky and more defined than Urza's magic.
It's not supposed to be armor, at least.
Yeah. But she's like, it's similar, but not the exact same thing. So, you know, everyone gets to do their cool little magic. You know, well, Loki even comes in with his attack, and Lucy has her Regulus Lucy kick. And the joke is like, but that's just a kick. And Loki's like, it does include some of my light magic. And I'm like, why are you making this a joke? That could be like...
She sends the creature flying.
Yeah, it's actually... effective. It's a cool moment. Like, she's fucking kicking it with a blast of energy out of her fucking feet. Why are we shitting on this?
Kidding. They
then cut away to the Sky Sisters, who find the leader of Orochi Finn, and they're going to go try to get her, but before they can, a blast of energy, death magic, something comes and attacks them, and they're like, oh, who's that? As a mysterious figure shows up, and it's Dun Dun Dun, Blue Note Stinger. I don't know who that is. Hold on, let me open up the Fairy Tale Wikia to see if I remember anything. Blue Note Stinger.
Remember the guy's design? I don't remember anything about him.
I vaguely remember him, but I don't remember, like...
He must have been in the guild.
He was apparently the former deputy commander of Grimmar Heart. So that was the evil guild that, like, Fiora was a part of, the hair girl. Or no, sorry. This was the guild that Hades was the commander of. This is the one that fought them on the island during that arc.
Okay.
I don't remember what he did.
Gravity powers.
Well, I know he has gravity powers. I'm trying to remember what he did in that arc. Oh, he fought Gildarts. That's it. So this was a guy who was on Gildarts level at some point.
Right.
Or at least he fought Gildarts. I mean, doesn't mean he's on his power level because Fairy Tail beats everybody. Anyways, Blue Note Stinger's here, Nick. Dun-dun-dun.
I do like this moment because he, like, just fucking floors Sharia and Carla and Wendy. And then Nasty just shows up and just picks Sherry up off the ground. And he's completely no-selling the gravity.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, good job.
And they just end it with, like, now there's a man you can count on, Natsu. That's right, ladies. Take a step back. The man's here. I know it's not their intention, just that line probably should have been rewritten in some way, different manner.
Hashtag give witches a chance.
I want to like this chapter because... if you remove the stupid fan service and weird, like, Lucy, your new power sucks, like, jokes.
No, it doesn't!
Like, this is a good chapter! Lucy's new ability is awesome! The fight scenes between these characters look cool. If you just remove the panty shots and the creepy cover page and the weird, wow, are you finding a dress? That's just a stupid kick. Like, this would be a really cool action chapter.
It's doing what it's supposed to. You know, establishing that all the important characters are stronger from the time skip, which is really all you need to do at this point. But yeah, it's just kind of doing that thing where it's almost holding itself back from actually doing it all out.
I don't know why. The big mistakes it's doing here. One, this is a huge moment for Lucy. I don't get this. This is such a cool moment for her, and it's just being shat all over. But the second one, I really hope that Wendy actually gets to have some kind of final moment in this, because of, like, her big reintroduction into the guild is essentially just a story about how Natsu's grown stronger over the past 2 years. That's a pretty big waste of this entire story to develop, like, this entire narrative of going to find the Fairy Tail guild members and what they've done over the past 2 years. I know what Natsu's done. He fucking burned down a coliseum with his aura. Let's see what these other characters are doing.
Wendy's just like, actually, I decided to back the winning horse. Bye, guys.
Yeah, she's just like, let's go, Team Blue Note Stinger! Why? You did that very quickly. All right. Food Wars. Shogunkidosama.
Chapter 108. Choose your path. So, Arato is running a lot of stuff at the cuisine place, Midamura Western Cuisine, and she's, like, set this whole system, and she's got computer glasses on and is handling a whole bunch of stuff, and they're like, oh, man, she is really going above and beyond, and they're, like, completely impressed with her. But eventually she just kind of goes, she just thinks about what Soma talked to her about, saying, you know, they're not really doing enough. And eventually she realizes, oh yeah, we have to leave soon. And Soma apparently has, like, been hovering over her this whole time. It's like, yeah, and then they're going to be right back where they were before. So we need to actually establish, you know, something, a permanent solution, because while they could hire some part-timers to replace us, then that's still not a permanent solution. So, yeah.
That's what I was worried about. So Rot goes, we need to have an emergency meeting, like, burst through the door, and, like, the manager spews his coffee everywhere and stuff. It's like, yeah, Rato, he's like, you're kind of slow for a smart person, aren't you?
She's just like, I never saw this coming. You're like, you let the idiot figure this out before you? Come on.
Maybe she just has too much of a hands-on approach. I don't know. So, we cut over to where Megumi is still washing dishes and stuff, and she's thinking to herself, like, I'm just going to be stuck doing nothing but minor chores, and I don't know what I'm going to do, because I can't do something like what Ariana is doing. I have to find a way to be useful, but, you know, what am I going to do? And before we change scenes again, she looks down at a stack of dishes that someone brings her and notices something. But then we cut over to Miyamura Western Cuisine, meeting in progress, and so they're like, oh, you know, we've been fine, you know, with these two guys here, so what's wrong? Well, we're not going to be able to replace, you know, the super effective problem solver that is Soma. We're not going to be able to replace Arato's accuracy and efficiency. So they started making suggestions. Arato says maybe we should trim the menu. But Miyamura says, no, we can't do that, because some of the recipes on there have been there since my grandfather ran the place, and I can never change them. Arato says, you know, yeah, look at reality. You could go out of business. But all the workers are like, no, we can't do that. We can't get rid of the identity of the restaurant that way. It would not be Miyamura's without, you know, that menu. So someone says, look, you are basically, you know, passing on the hardship to your customers if you do this. You know, they try and come to get a quick bite before they go to the station, but they aren't going to get to taste your food because of how busy this place is. So eventually he turns to the manager and he's like, what kind of restaurant do you want this to be? And then he says, there's an idea I want you to hear out. Then we cut over to the other restaurant. Megumi approaches the head chef and he's like, I have a suggestion about the full course menu and, you know, the second dish, the fish salad. Don't give me ideas too! Go back washing dishes! I'm not going to take suggestions from both of you assholes!
Tired of these fucking high school girls taking control of my goddamn restaurant.
So Megumi is like, I'm sorry. She starts to go in, but Ariana's like, no, I want to hear your idea. So she's like, well, I thought that maybe we could let the customers decide how much dressing they want. And so the head chef is like, what does that matter? And Ariana's like, no, go on. What makes you think that? And she said, well, the dirty dishes that come back, some have a lot of dressing left on them, and others look like the customer dipped their bread in the dressing, but then left their vegetables. So Aaron's like, wow, she realized that just by fucking washing the dishes. She found something that she could do to impact the restaurant. Which I think is my favorite part of this, like, chapter, is that, you know, looking through stuff, Ariana does the whole thing where it's like, you know, I just improved the fucking dishes all around. Arato and Soma have a broken system to deal with and they fix it. This is actually a pretty creative way to make an impact, I think, for this whole premise. But yeah, Megumi comes up with this, and so she's like, you know, I don't know if would it be too hard to implement that change? And Ariana's like, well, no, you could use the saucière to serve sauces and gravies and so on like that. You know, they do that in France, so you could present it as a traditional lunch. And, you know, you could be a novelty for the customers and stuff like that. And the head chef's like, no! No! But then...
It's like immediately after he's like, no one will ever...
Mess with my process. And the waiter comes in. A customer's requesting more dressing, head chef.
The customer's addressing the exact point just brought up. I'm sorry, I'm kind of fucking cutting the rug. I'm putting you in the barrel, but... I mean, it was really, like, almost planned. It's perfect how this lined up.
I love the little expression that rushes to the girl's at where he's like, yep, and Megan's like, oh, my idea will work!
I actually like that, because, I don't know a whole lot about Arena. Like, I still have that to catch up on, but I just came with the presumption that because she's such a haughty kind of person, she'd be rubbing it in this guy's face, but she doesn't seem to be that way at all. Like, she's just like, yeah, my ideas are right, but I'm glad because it's improving this restaurant.
Yeah, it is kind of a strange thing, and I think that part of it, I think, is just that as time has gone on, Ariana has been portrayed as less of just a, you know, cold bitch character. She's, you know, kind of been fleshed out more. And also, I think it's being implied that she has been changed by witnessing the tournament, and a lot lot of ways that a lot of the students have been. It's just kind of weird because she hasn't been in the spotlight, so it's not as noticeable a change. So then we go over to the Minamori's cuisine, and so some people are like, oh, hey, a restaurant, maybe we should grab some food. Like, oh, wait a minute, it's reservations only. So, flashback, someone made the suggestion about this, and so he said, like, look, there's a big menu, dedicated service, it's a great place to eat, but your environment has changed, that is eroding away your best qualities, so it's a drastic change, but I think you should turn away the walk-ins, do a full reservations-only system. People are like, oh, what about all the new foot traffic we'll get? But Arato jumps in and says, no, you need to change or you're going to risk closing the door to the future. If there's an ideal that you truly wish to reach, then never mind appearances, grab it and cling to it as hard as you can. I think that this restaurant truly has potential I believe in from the bottom of my heart. And seemingly, people responded to the passionate speech, and Minamura, you know, agreed to the change. And we have this pretty heartwarming sort of moment where this old customer of theirs comes in and says, "Oh, you know, it's always so busy that I never have found the time to actually sit here and wait. But you know, when you start taking reservations, I immediately jumped in." So yeah, I like, you know, my usual Neapolitan, and the Minamura finishes his order by knowing, oh, you want me to go easy on the salt? And he's like, yeah, I knew you would remember. And they just have this very pleasant thing where he enjoys his meal and is happy to be there. And then at the end of it, yeah, they've made a difference because they, you know, work together. And that's it. They pass. Everyone has passed the stagiaire test. And it ends with, like, someone saying, happy to serve, and Arato's like, it's thank you, please come again, so don't invent new phrases for the restaurant.
This is a very good chapter. I mean, it had a lot of emotion to it, which I absolutely adore. There's something about how this series has so much passion in it that I just absolutely find just enchanting. Like, how they're carrying themselves over just the situation of how this restaurant is dealing with people. Like, I just like Soma's line where he's just like, aren't you shafting the customers by taking this approach? Like, I know you don't want to lose the visitors, but by not, you know, working the system out, you're just making everyone else have a worse time because of it. And just this impassioned speech about, like, you know, if you have an ideal to go for it. And just seeing, as you said, the guy come in and, you know, he has his order finished for him, and then he sits there, he gets to enjoy the meal, he has such a big smile on his face, he's just like, can I have a cup of coffee? It's like, of course. It's, you know, it's done, like, almost in this, like, shaded, like, almost like an 80s, like, painting, like Designing Women almost had, like, that, like, fucking, like, water painting kind of style to it at the opening. We're just like, oh, it's, like, so peaceful and happy right now. I just dug it a lot. I thought this was a very good chapter.
I like the mini arc.
Mm-hmm. And you called it. It was a quick, short arc.
I seriously do like the thing with Megumi, and it actually does really work well in the way that her character has been portrayed at this point, in that she always is the one who kind of takes notice of what the customer wants more than anyone else does. So Gakuhote.
Yes.
Okay. Backstory time. Not as much as I thought we were going to get, but
it's really quick.
Chapter 12, Civil Trial Arc 2, The Courtroom. So, we get a little bit of an explanation from Baku relating how he and Sarutobi met. Apparently, Baku was fucking timid as hell with public speech, which is a freaking great revelation. I mean, he was terrified of public speech, and then he got into all these big courtroom confrontations and stuff. But Sarutobi was there from the beginning and was kind of there to cheer him up and stuff. And stuck by his side, and they had all these adventures together, and so on and so forth. But then, the bloody classroom session. One teacher, 35 students, 36 casualties total. It was Japan's worst classroom session ever. It seems like a bit of an understatement.
Like, the rest of them we've seen thus far, it's like the worst one we saw outside of this was someone killed a fish. And they're just like, oh, there's this one thing where 36 students, or 35 students died.
Not like horrible national tragedy. It was the worst classroom session ever. People died. Yeah.
Sounds like it got pretty crazy. And a bunch of first graders were blamed for it.
But we still get kind of a bit of a not telling you as much yet because Abaka says, yeah, the only three survivors were me, Sarutobi, and this girl, Kijima. But both Sarutobi and I ended up with selective amnesia from the shock. We had trouble recalling our classmates' faces, much less the details of that session. So, still not good telling you very much yet. Gotta wait for more.
But... Well, the one thing that's interesting of that, too, is the notes that he and Sarutobi have the selective amnesia.
I know it's the same thing.
And the perception I'm getting is the other girl doesn't, and she's a prosecutor. Is what I'm. That's the assumption I'm working on.
I don't know.
Which might play into that, I think.
It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I wonder, does Abaku say that because he knows Kijima, like, doesn't have selective amnesia, or does he actually not know about him? So, Abaku says, yeah, you know, the second grade school that Sarutobi and I attended together. Again, doesn't mention Kijima. Onigashima Elementary, which later came to be called the Great Schooler's Penitentiary. But we go from there straight to the start of the classroom session. Abaku, attorney for Picasso, and Sarutobi, attorney for Da Vinci. So, Sarutobi starts off by saying, like, you know, there are various explanations for, you know, things looking like without one of them actually committing plagiarism. Such as, if the two artists share the same boots. And Vaku says, he means roots.
Well.
Okay. You're like, she is sorry. Is he really turning you in? Sorry that he gets all embarrassed. Like, shut up!
No, I don't think that guy's a real lawyer, man.
Oh, no, he don't talk well. I think. Really have done?
I think he might be ninja.
A lot of stuff happens in this chapter, so... Sarutobi says, alright, Picasso says, you know, that the alum Van Gogh's mentor, and, you know, he says, Picasso says, yes, you know, in first grade, I chose the path of fine art after being moved by one of Ms. Van Gogh's old paintings. Sarutobi says, yes, Ms. Van Gogh. As an alum, she's been teaching art here while attending art college and studying under the famous Suenari Yamo, and I have called her here as a witness. And so we were like, oh, okay. And then he starts to go through more, and he's like, ah, but what about Da Vinci's roots? And so Tenuto is like, ah, well, Da Vinci's mentor is some upperclassman named called Dali, so that's unrelated to Ms. Van Gogh. And Sarutobi says, his parents divorced back when he was 5 years old.
Dude, not cool.
And so, yeah, his father had issues. His mother was awarded full custody of Da Vinci. And Abaku says, this is all private stuff. That this has no relevance. No, there is a connection. Da Vinci has a sister who's 8 years older. When the divorce happened, Big Sis went to live with her father. And so her last name's different. The father's family name is Go. Honami Go, a.k.a. Ms. Van Gogh, is Da Vinci's big sister!
And the plot thickens.
Abaku says, do you have proof of that? And Sarutobi says, who do you think you're talking to? For me, there is only proof! Jutsu of evidence everywhere, shuriken! Just throws all these shuriken with bits of evidence attached to them onto the board. Sticks everywhere. Like family pictures, official divorce documents, family registry. And Abaku's like, Jesus Christ, I only lost this guy brave to gather this evidence. So, of course, Da Vinci comes in and he's like, Picasso doesn't even know my secret. I didn't tell you any of this! And Sarutobi says, ha, well, I'm a ninja, you see. A client's lies are an attorney's greatest foes. Your house, a municipal office, there is nowhere I can't infiltrate illegally. Sorry, but if I'm to defend you, be your sign that you can't hide anything from me. He holds up a picture. He's like, oh god, he's even got a sexy pic of me. What is with this serious obsession with showering 12-year-olds?
At least they're getting some gender equality, finally.
That doesn't make it any better. Problem.
No, not in the least, but...
And so Abaku comes in and he says, this is Sarutobi's true worth. For sure, he's an exceptionally poor speaker for one of the three tongues. So much so that he's called a man with a paper-like tongue, meaning flappy. So Tenda's like, Kami as in paper instead of divine? That is such a weird joke to, like, do this early on.
I love that, though, like, the three divine tongues. I mean, obviously it's a Japanese joke that's just going to have to be explained in English, but I do enjoy that.
Sarutobi possesses a tremendous evidence collection ability that makes use of his ninja skills. He thoroughly vets his clients, and if he finds any conclusive evidence of a false charge, he'll bring it out. On the other hand, if it reveals that his client is guilty, he'll drop the case. That's why he's undefeated and why he's invincible. This is absolute evidence. This is Kotaro Sarutobi's classroom session style. That is a really cool, like, introduction there.
Oh yeah, they introduced this dude right. Like, you know, everyone's like, what does this guy do? He seems like such a goof, and it's just like, he isn't a Baku. He has a completely different style, you know. He comes in and he's the guy who has all the evidence to prove his point.
And I like that where this is why he is undefeated, is because he just knows to drop the case. So if he hits the courtroom, chances are you're fucked.
And I love, the image of him, like, during the shot where they explain that, where he's, like, diving towards the camera with a shuri, you know, a sword in one hand, and, like, documents flying around him, shurikens flying, just looks like a fucking badass.
Makes his stuff, even though it's, like, completely unrelated stuff, it looks ninja-like and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Baku's like, but if he is absolute evidence, I am absolute Ranpa. I just need to shred holes in his logic. And so he's like, alright, all you've proved is that these are roots of blood. You can't assert that Da Vinci was influenced by Van Gogh the same way Picasso was, just because they're siblings. And Sarutobi says, you're right. It is unreasonable to use merely the sharing of the same influences to explain this degree of similarity. But the two do have a previously unknown common crossing point, Ms. Van Gogh. Now, how we interpret this... What if it has nothing to do with roots? For example, ghostwriting. What if Ms. Van Gogh painted both Picasso and Da Vinci's works? That explained why their paintings look similar! And Ms. Van Gogh looks incredibly nervous. So Da Vinci comes in and is like, wait a minute, you're my attorney, what are you doing? And Sarutobi says, shut up, I don't really care about you. This is a fight for the truth between me and Ibaku. Stay out of the way.
Such a badass panel, man. Fucking Obata's art is just incredible in that.
Looks like such an asshole, but so, like, honorable opponent, too. It's like, no, I want to beat Ibaku, and that's all I care about. I don't care about you. I just care about being right.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So he says, like, all right. I doubt the motive was actually money, because you can't make money off of grade school paintings and stuff. So Ms. Van Gogh, so he's like, I'll bet the Ms. Van Gogh is being threatened with her secrets, considering there's plenty of fodder here for extortion, teacher, student, and sister, brother. And Ms. Van Gogh says, wait a minute, I've been letting you talk and stuff, but this is all just conjecture. What kind of evidence do you have that you said the magic word. So he says, didn't you hear me earlier, Ms. Van Gogh? For me, there is only evidence. He, like, slashes his sword right in front of her face, and there are pictures impaled on the sword down front. Oh, God. He says, like, these are what appear to be concept sketches for the initial two paintings that started the plagiarism rumors, and I took the liberty of taking these from your room at home. I think I've now proved you're the one who painted those works. So... people are murmuring in the crowd and stuff like that. So, man, Picasso and Da Vinci both suck. Of course their works rock, but teacher painted them. Of course, both the guys are just looking all ashamed and nervous and stuff. I feel so bad for them.
And everyone's just like, fuck you guys, boo! Freaking
people throwing paper at them. Oh, God. And I did not recognize her at first.
It's Pine!
It's Pine. She's not wearing a tiara. I did not know who it was at first.
You're like, holy shit, she's a normal girl at this point.
So she says, like, oh man, it hasn't even been 10 minutes, so she's completely one-sided. One of the three tongues of deep. What the hell happened to Inagami? Why, you're making me look bad, you asshole.
Well, she actually doesn't say that.
No, she does.
She actually just seems very supportive, which is weird. It's almost like after that last case,
it's
she's
like Pine will actually be an important character, even though she's been defeated three times.
It's just like Pine's like, alright, I guess I'll stop being like a fucking hoity-toity bitch and just actually be a friendly character from now on.
So Sarutobi is like, all right, Ibaku, I've won. Any and all Ranpa shall fall before overwhelming, irrefutable evidence. Even back then, if we'd only had incontrovertible proof, we wouldn't have gotten sent to Onigashima. In these evidence-stressing current courts, I reign supreme. So just accept your defeat civilly and come work for me, Abaku. And so Abaku says, Sarutobi, you've still got a real simple brain. It's just this great fucking full-page spread of just them looking at each other. And Abaku's just got this manic grin, and Sarutobi is surprised as hell. Sarutobi's like, what are you talking about? I've gathered all these evidence. This is completely impeccable. And Abaku says, yeah, and I got to thank you for that. For your proof will be the tailwind for my Rampa. The truth behind this plagiarism turmoil isn't that straightforward, and the key to it is these last two paintings, they're absolutely identical. Our classroom session isn't over yet. I'm gonna romp on the hell out of your cheating absolute evidence.
Dun-dun-dun, Nick! The twists, they keep coming.
This is a freaking awesome chapter.
It is.
So cool.
It is very cool. Here's the thing. People are worried right now because Gakkyo Hotei was in the bottom five this week. That's not really a cause for concern right now. Understand that we just had four new Jump series starting in the magazine, and those have yet to really reach official rankings yet. And, I mean, no offense to Kagami Gami, Cyber Rogi, and Ultra Battle Satellite, but I imagine those are probably going to drop relatively quickly. I do not think this is a series that is in danger of cancellation quite yet.
It got color pages last week.
It got color pages. It has Obata's name attached to it. This is a series that is going to get a very long chance. And I think Sarutobi, once those chapters start getting ranked, is going to increase this series ranking significantly because he is a big, fun character. And this is a series that's just going to have dips and valleys to its, you know, rises and valleys to its rankings. It's a series that is going to be a lot of build up to eventually the big final arcs, and I think it will pay off. So I'm not, if, you know, 4 weeks from now it's still in the bottom five, then I might be more concerned, but I think right now it's not really something to get too concerned about. And overall, I really just enjoy this series immensely. I love Obata's art. I love how he's slowly enhancing this world, adding to these characters and all that. I really just dig it greatly. Also, I love getting to add the Shonen, or the fucking Phoenix Wright music in the background, so.
I know you do.
You do not understand how much immense joy I take out of it. If I had a soundboard where I could add the sound effects to it, too, like the gavel smack and, like, gasping people, like, things, I would have that in there, too. It's My Hero Academia.
Right. Okay. More stuff that I can actually follow. Sort of. Because they're setting up stuff with characters I'm still not familiar with, basically.
Nick, it's a battle tournament!
Battle tournament. One-on-one fights. Single elimination. Ladder match. Tournament ladder. Not ladder. Shut up, Nick. So, people are like, I want to drop out. This guy wants to drop out as Ojiro, who gets this big, like, this is his power thing at the start of the chapter. He's not going to use his power, though, because he doesn't want to do it. And he's just like, yeah, I have no memories of anything that happened during the cavalry battle. So it's probably his quirk that did it. People turn over and like, oh, he was... And Deku looks over and is like, he was teamed up with that guy. This guy with kind of messy hair who's just being quiet off by himself. And so Tendo says, you know, I know this is a great opportunity, but, you know, everyone else made it here by their own strength, and yet I'm standing here, and I don't even know how or why. So I won't take this opportunity. So, you know, I'm doing this for the sake of my pride. One other guy says, yeah, I can't remember anything either, so I'll withdraw too. And so the instructor is like, all right, fine then. So you've withdrawn. We'll replace two of them with members of Team Kendo, which took fifth. And so we get two replacements, basically. And it's like, all right, Tetsu, what a weird name, and Shiozaki will bring us back up to 16 competitors. And here are the matchups. And Deku is put up against the guy that Tento pointed out before, which is Shinso. And
someone pointed out to me that Tetsu's a character, and it's going to be like our fucking Chin for the series. Like, Tetsu! I don't know who he is, but I'm so happy he's around with his name.
So Deku also realizes, oh, hey, I'm set to go against Todoroki if we both win our first round matches. And then Shinso just comes up behind Deku and he's like, Izuku Midoriya, that's you, right? And but Tenta like kind of muffles Deku immediately with his tail and he's like, that guy, don't answer him. He doesn't say why. We find out at the end of the chapter, basically. Then we get Uraraka Oh.
Is that... Oh, we didn't get a little thing.
Bakugo is going up against Uraraka, basically. So Gravity Girl and Explodey Guy, who are important main characters. And Ida is going up against some guy who I don't know.
It looks like that Inventor Girl from the previous cavalry battle.
Oh, I guess it is, yeah. Which is, you know, they're kind of both brainy types, too, so... Alright, they say, like, okay, we're gonna go forward with the tournaments, and we just kind of get this montage of basically people kind of preparing for the tournament their own ways, mostly just relaxing in different ways. All the girls who didn't want to be cheerleaders are being cheerleaders, apparently. Deku is incredibly nervous, it looks like. Ida is kind of just, I guess, chugging energy drinks. And then eventually it was like, yeah, you know, some people tried to relax, some tried to psych themselves up. Everyone was dealing with it differently before we knew what the time had come. Fight starts! Deku is up first against Shinso. And so All Might kind of pulls Deku aside beforehand, and he talks to him and is like, ah, you're finally getting the hang of using One for All. Deku's like, well, not really, you know. I'm still uneasy about it. I'm trying to recall when I launched it at that villain, but feels dangerous. It's like I could fall apart if I lose focus for a second. All Might says, well, remember when I talked about, you know, going between 0 and 100? Well, right now, your body is capable of about 5%. Deku's like, well, I don't know. It's not a whole lot, basically. And All Might says, well, that's just because you're always trying your damn hardest, my dear prince of nonsense. And he chops him on the head.
Jerk! It hurts!
He says, now listen, especially when you're feeling worried or scared, and he transforms. That's when you gotta smile. You've come this far, so show some bravado, even if it's fake. Never forget that I'm expecting big things from you. No fucking pressure! Fucking Superman over here is like, I'm expecting great things for you.
Don't!
So, match starts up. Shinso against Midoriya. They're like, okay, rules. Knock your opponent out of the ring, immobilize them, get them to say, I give up, those are the ways to win. Bring the pain! We've got our good old recovery girl on standby. And fight dirty if you must. Ethics have no meaning here.
It's weird for a hero school to be saying that, but okay.
Don't kill each other, though. You'll be disqualified. Actually says that.
I'm just like, alright, don't kill him, but anything else is okay. Just like a hero.
Shinso then says, this battle is going to test your strength of will. If you've got any kind of vision for your future, there is no sense in worrying about how you get there. Like that monkey babbling about his stupid pride. What kind of dumbass throws away a chance like this? And Deku goes, what did you say? Well, he rushes forward and then suddenly he just freezes. And Shinso says, it's my win. And Tendo goes, ah! I tried to warn you! Except I didn't, because I didn't explain why I had to warn you. And the announcer just says, yeah, meter section of the match. Suddenly, Midoriya is frozen in place, and that's the end of the chapter.
Since we're getting kind of late already, I'll just say, cool chapter. Curious to see what this guy's powers are.
All right. Let's see how fast I can get through Nisekoi. Claude found out about the plan, locked Chitoke in the room until right before they're going to leave. Tsugumi knows about it. Claude isn't doing anything to punish her because Tsugumi was just showing loyalty. But because of that same loyalty, she's trying to try and break Chitoke out. Done! Okay.
Bam!
One piece.
Nailed it.
Zoro was awesome.
No, I unfortunately, I have to do something because this.
Chapter 778.
This chapter is so awesome, Nick.
Tactics number 5. Pika bearing down on the plateau, gonna crush everybody on it in the pursuit of King Riku. Zoro is trying to chase after him to stop him. Bartolomeo is like, oh no! Everyone's like, oh no! Isabello is like, I will use my king punch to save everyone. And Zoro's like, hey, king, whoever you are. don't just destroy him. You know, if you don't beat his main body, he will just regenerate again. Well, then what do I do? Wait 2 minutes. Then he rushes over to the Commodore. He's like, you throw people like cans, right? He's like, well, yeah. People are trying to stop Pika by shooting cans at him. People are trying to rush King Riku to safety. And he's like, ah, no, evacuate everyone else. He's after me.
And they're like, no, you have to come with us. We have to protect you. Then we cut back over to Zoro. And Orlumbus, the Commodore, is like, all right, you sure you want me to do this? Because I'm going to throw you, yeah. But it was not designed for the safety of the person being thrown. He's like, no, just do it. Cannonball special fucking time. I'm Wolverine and you're Colossus. So he throws him. Zoro flies through the air. Armament hockeys his swords up while rushing through the air. And he recites this big chant. And he's like, all right, there's nothing I can't cut. Three sword style secret art as Pika's giant stone hand comes crashing down towards King Riku. And as he does so, he's like, one who cannot crush his foes is not fit to be a king. And Riku says, you are correct. I was helpless to protect my kingdom. I will never sit atop the throne again, but at least I did what I must to remain human. If murder is the only means for me to live, then I choose death. There is no future for a nation of slaughter. Everyone's like, oh, King Riku. And Pika's like, well, you're gonna die now, so... Zoro comes in. God. Billionfold world. How the hell do you say this?
Trishiliosum.
I don't know how you say that, CH. He cuts him in half. And then cuts him in half again.
Oh, it's so awesome. Because he realizes that Pika is constantly escaping into one part of the stone that breaks. So he's just waiting to see which one shows life. And then he cuts that into pieces, too.
Basically, just keeps on leaving him fewer and fewer places to run. Cutting it into tiny, tiny, tiny pieces.
He even starts leaping off of the rubble to stay in the air to keep cutting him into more pieces.
And so he's just like, alright, moving stone and dead stone. The real body always stays in one of the remaining pieces. It never gets split. And he's like, in the air. He can't escape into the ground. Come on out, Pika. And Pika's like, ah, he's trapped me, but do you really think you've won? He bursts out of the stone. Do you really think that by cutting stone you can defeat me? I am invincible when infused with haki. Once I slam you to the ground, you'll be finished! And Zoro says, that's assuming your hockey's greater than mine. There's nothing I can't cut. 3,000 worlds!
Nick! It's Zoro's secret attack!
This fucking burst through the hockey armor. Pika just falls to the ground bleeding. Rubble from his stone form is crashing into the plateau. Usopp is like, oh, Zoro! And Zoro's like, quit making trouble for those on the straight and narrow. And everyone's like, oh, the remains are falling down us. We're still going to die. Usopp's like, save me. Elizabeth, King Punch, punches all the rubble away. He's like, God, that's so making me use my King Punch just to clear the rubble away. I'll get you for this. And Zoro just says, solid execution. That's that.
Oh, God. It's just so cool. I made the joke on Twitter that I was like, after this chapter, I needed a cigarette. But it was such a satisfying thing. Like, it's not a fight that was as back and forth and as cool as, like, Zoro versus Kaku. But Zoro is at his absolute best when he's a badass. And this chapter is fucking incredibly awesome. Just seeing him fly through the air, just cut fucking Pika right in half. And then he just keeps slicing it even further from there, you know, staying in midair by jumping off of rubble and then finishing it off with his secret technique. We haven't seen 3,000 worlds since the Oars fight way back when. It's so satisfying. Oh, such a cool little exchange. I love the ending with all the pieces falling down too, and Elizabeth punches them away. Just like a nice satisfaction way of wrapping up that, you know, Chekhov's gun that's been sitting there for a while. And it's just the way it ends. Solid execution. Like, God, such a fucking badass. Or I love you, man.
All right, we got Seven Deadly Sins.
No, I didn't read it. Just go ahead.
Go, Toriko.
I specifically was like, not going to read it this week.
Gourmet.
In fact, I'm probably just going to drop it from the recap.
Gourmet 314. Macaque, I have this dance. Oh, God, that title. Kaka realizes that Komatsu is not really Komatsu, he is just a poison doll. So he's like, wait, where did Komatsu go? He couldn't move into this state. Wait a minute, where's the penguin? He was with him!
It's always the penguin!
Kaka is just like, the gravity. Oh god. At this point, the choo-choo chomper self-amputation mode wore off. It was instantly besieged by gravity 100 times that of normal, and collapsed around Kaka. who's like, Argon! Kaka then bursts out of the collapsed choo-choo chomper, and she's like, those motherfuckers. And she is immediately surrounded by Kiss and Terry and Quinn, and says, I have some questions to ask them, and I'm sure the three of you know this, but if you get in my way, I will devour you. And she just goes full war face, and they're growling at her. Meanwhile, inside of the Dome of Hair, they're trying to do the dance with the Monkey King. Everything looks super fucking goofy. The expressions on their faces are so goddamn weird. Lots of narration explaining that during the training, when Coco and Sunny, you know, juggled their, you know, the seeds together, they basically realized that stuff made it easier when they worked together, basically, when they were using monkey martial arts. So they're more effective if they all synchronize together than if they all try to do it apart. They're doing the beautiful dance of monkey martial arts.
I'm glad there's no point in the monkey martial arts dance in which you need two arms, or else Toriko would be fucked.
Oh, yeah. The Monkey King gets super, super happy. They're like, if they miss this one step, it's over. And it's like, oh, there was a painting, and it was one of the few missing ones. It wasn't incomplete or missing, it had just been removed. And even Coco's eyes couldn't read its electromagnetic waves. Why? It was there in the past. Whatever. The King cells displayed their highest concentration of the day. Okay, now for the last one. They're like, okay, we have to just observe the Monkey King and just react to him. The Monkey King kind of looks at them, and they're like, how's he going to move? What's he going to do? What's he going to do? What's the last step? Come on, man. What's the last step? And the Monkey King looks at them. It's like, but thinking things are going great. Great. Can be an omen of failure to come. The Monkey King looks all disappointed. They're like, oh no, we failed. And he looks so fucking pissed off. And they're like, oh god!
Whoops.
So Zebra's like, fuck this, explosive voice. Everyone, alright, come on. Let's put our fists together and make one big fist. Because that is how this works. Super punch!
It's crazy, stupid, awesome, which is when Toriko is fun.
End of chapter. Giant hand punch.
I don't know exactly what happens, but yeah, the fact that they just wrapped all of their fists together to form one super four-man fist is just like the kind of stupid awesome that Toriko was made for. I enjoyed this chapter.
Okay.
Just
Jumpstart series. Ultra Battle Satellite. There are street fights. There is for that are for money.
TUVW. Okay, I had my order wrong. I forgot how to spell again, Nick.
So there was this guy, and he is in a martial arts tournament, and he gets disqualified, breaking rules and stuff. His name is Jin Matsuria, and he's known as the Cheater King because breaks the rules and stuff like that. But he's invited to this open tournament for street fights, which have no rules. And the guy that he met in the tournament gets beaten up by this one guy with long hair. And then he's like, I will fight you now. And the guy tries to attack him as soon as he registers so he can, like, sneak attack him. The guy reaches up and, like, breaks his finger as he tries to swat him. He's like, oh, my finger! The guy proceeds to immediately do a really fucking awesome beatdown because he just fucking wails on him. Bunch of kicks, and then he's just like, and the guy tries to hit him with a shovel. Fucking punches the hand gripping the shovel, breaks his knuckles on the handle, and then he takes him down and punches him while he is falling to the concrete and busts his face open, and he wins. And that is the end of the chapter. That is the end of the first chapter. It is a battle series. It is better than Judo's, but whatever.
Yes, it's not, I forget it, I had a point and I lost it.
It's okay, basically.
I don't like the art, but that's not the worst I could say.
I really do not.
I hate the girls in this. I don't know why. Like, they're blank doll-like
faces.
That's weird.
Weird faces, and they're all weird in different ways.
Yeah, just yeah. But otherwise, it's fine.
World Trigger.
Bring it home, Nick.
I'm out of water.
Do you want me to take over for it?
Just long enough for me to grab water.
Real quick. Okay, so we open up, and Gami's like, what? You lost? How does that happen? Or no, Konami. That's her name. Game company. And they're like, yeah, I lost to some dude named Murakami. You know, it happens. We found out a bit of side effect, though, so that's actually probably better than to just not learn about it at all. And they basically go in to explain how Ko's sleeping enhanced ability works. Basically, he can learn a lot more from sleeping and retain a lot more than anybody else. That's his side effect. So essentially giving him a moment to rest and kind of gather himself allows him to pick up the basics a lot quicker. And that's essentially why he and Arafune have some kind of tension between them, because Arafune originally taught Ko when he came into the academy about how to use a Kotetsu is the name I think they call it for the katanas. And Ko picked it up so much quicker because he was just able to grasp everything a lot faster. Although, it seems like someone I thought suggested that may not be the case, but maybe it's not. Anyways, they know that, you know, they have that side effect, but it's probably better that they learned about it. And Konami warns Osama not just to focus on Tsunari 1, but to also focus for Natsu Squad, because they're the ones who get to pick the stage, and they might be the ones to actually come out ahead in this. You mean to keep going, Nick?
I don't know where you are now.
The Cesari branch. We're meeting the Cesari company with Ko and the ramen and all that shit.
And with the weird sniper guy with the stupid hat.
Yes, that's the one.
That is a stupid hat.
That is a goofy hat. That is true.
Looking like Kyle from South Park.
Yes, he does. That is actually quite true.
So, his whole thing is like, I'll get some, you're going to have instant noodles, I will pour the water for you. And they're like, what are you doing? And they're like, oh, the water ran out. Yeah, you should check first. All right, I will go boil some more. He spills the flavor bits from the noodles. Okay.
I guess this is, you know, he's an eccentric person. And also, it's worth noting that, you know, we know Ko's awesome. But his team is ranked beneath, you know, Tamakome, and this is probably why. His teammates aren't the best. But he...
Possibly.
But they're friends, you know, he's friends with them, so that's why he doesn't seem to be one in advance.
They establish that, basically, the way that you beat the team is to just neutralize him. Mm-hmm. By shooting him a lot.
It's the best kind of neutralization out there.
What a weird thing that he says when he spills the flavor noodles, too. It's like, all of the flavor bits fell out and died.
You don't do that every so often, Nick?
The food died?
Yes. Like, you never just spilled milk and you're just like, it's dead!
No, I have never done that, ever. Oh.
Well, my mom does it a lot, so I just hear it often, I guess.
Is that why people cry over spilled milk? Because they think it was sentient?
Yes. I spill milk and I'm just like, it had so much to live for!
Oh, God, like a crime scene! Everywhere. I'll never forget the sight of it.
I just need to distract myself with something. I'll watch the new Hulk movie. Hulk coming soon! Oh, I didn't need to see that.
Then we get introduced to a Natsu squad with sleepover study time. I mean, someone in a bed like studying for this is kind of weird. And she's the captain. She's like, sitting in bed, and she's like, okay, yeah, let's study and stuff. It was like Yuga Kumagai, attacker, sitting at her laptop, and then Rei Natsu, the captain, the shooter. She's like, okay, well, let's see here. The other two don't move as smoothly as frickin' Murakami. So, you know, he's the ace. And it's like, okay, what about Yuma Kuga over on the Tamako squad? Does he come up with their strategies? Interesting point, because Yuka, the non-captain girl, says, yeah, I'll bet he does. He's a cut above the rest. And they're like, Amatori has that great trial capacity, but she hasn't gotten a single point. It just seems like she demolishes the field with their cannon. So, you know, Yuma's going to be the one coming for points. So, it's interesting the way that people have these perceptions about Tamakoma, basically, based on what little they've seen in their matches and stuff. I like that. They bring up how Suicide Squad defeated Tsunari 1 pretty easily just by fucking shooting at them and holding the Murakami back so they couldn't do anything to him. It's like, yeah, so they just figured out that stopping Murakami would get them the win. And so they're like, yeah, it looks like Tsunari and Tamakoma are similar. The attacker is strong, the others aren't. So why don't we have the fight within Natsu's range? If we make it a mid-range battle, we should be in good shape, because Natsu is the superior gunner out of the three of them by a fair amount. Well, mostly a fair amount over Omasu, who is, like, at half for a point total. Poor Amasu. And they're like, okay, we don't have Sewer Squad's firepower, so we'll stay on the defensive, and keep in mind that running out the clock is also an option. And after that, it all depends on Akane, who also has a stupid hat! Looks like she could conduct a train!
Well, Nick, maybe that's just a trend. Maybe snipers and World Trigger have big, stupid hats.
Or they have two sniper rifles.
Yeah, all snipers are either boring or fucking weird.
Meanwhile, Yuma gets approached by... I keep forgetting this guy's name. Guy who looks like...
Mayhews. Yeah, just call him Mayhews. That's who he is.
Just Hughes. So he's like, oh, do you not sleep? Yuma is like, no, I don't have to. Try on body. Oh. Okay, then. So he, like, gives him some coffee or something like that. He's like, oh, well, lost big today, huh? Someone's all worried about you, and he thinks he might be depressed. He's like, oh, come on, I'm not depressed at all. Everyone is training just as hard, and you can't win them all. But that's why it's interesting to fight strong opponents. These rank wars are really well thought out, and it's especially nice that nobody actually dies when they lose. And yet, yes, it is.
It's kind of a weird point. He's just like, thank goodness your training exercises don't murder everyone. Like, well, they'd be pretty counterproductive if they did.
Yeah. And here is the graduating class. There's about 3 arms between the 50 of them. But you know, it's like your dad was the one who actually came up with the system. Way back when there weren't even 10 of us on board, he was always happily talking about the future. He says, have fun, Yuma. There are still a lot of good times to be had. Before the horrifying stuff happens. But yeah, day of the competition head occurs. That's the end of the chapter, though. Not a whole lot, but, you know, necessary introduction of characters that are going to be fighting and stuff. I did like the little bit of extra focus that the not-Suzunari team got, so, yeah.
Yeah, I you know, again, I like that we're getting some insight into these different characters, and I think that works well to develop these antagonists or, you know, rival characters and builds up the whole thing.
But yeah, looking forward to the actual fight breaking out next time. That's, I think, going to do it, though, for the manga recap.
Yes. Oh, holy crap.
I think that we actually did a pretty good job this time on running through stuff.
Well, this is over a 2-hour episode, unfortunately, Nick. But
well, yeah, but we actually had a, you know, recommendation to go through, too. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on twitch.tv/RelotC, where we record the podcast Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Though sometimes we do need to change things up, so be sure to follow us on Twitter. He's at RelotC, and I'm at YRuler of Time. Also, check out past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com and send criticism, questions, and suggestions in the comments section or email them to us. weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com is the address. And, of course, please give us a rating or a review on iTunes so we can beat those woodworking assholes.
Yes, and a big thank you to several people. Actually, we got quite a few reviews this week.
Apparently, we shamed them into doing it this time.
Yes, from The Dark Might, from Isaac16, from The Doctor 14, Full Metal Pirate, and Voice Against Propaganda. It is highly appreciated that you guys have added reviews to us. It helps us with the rankings, and it helps grow Weekly Manga Recap until the point where we can conquer the world through our podcast, which will happen soon, I believe.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome.
Yes.
I've already figured out how to spend my first $1 million.
Can I have Australia? I'm going for the risk strategy of taking over the world.
Are we going to have to compete against each other after this?
Well, I mean, to make things fun.
Just play with people like pawns. Special thanks go out to Steve Mann, our Taokaraj. You can check out his Patreon, patreon.com/Steve Mann, and also a bunch of his artwork at rockfanboy.deviantart.com and idrawboobs.tumblr.com. And additionally, special thanks to The Infamous Planet for making those awesome visual editions of our podcast. He is now doing more recent stuff and getting them out very quickly, and I'm sure he is very angry at us right now. For something we did during the course of the podcast.
Well, he loves MXO, so I think he's furious at us for that alone.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, sorry.
I have the suggestion for next
time. Is it Age of Ultron?
No.
Because I'm going to tell you, Nick, I'm like, the moment this podcast is done, my finger's right on the play button to watch it again.
Okay.
This is a series that actually we got suggested a few years ago, but I kind of passed over it after checking it out a bit. But got a suggestion for it very recently, went back to it, and I was like, yeah, let's fucking do it. It's called Terra for Mars.
Oh.
It's basically, premise of the series is there was this space program, we need to colonize Mars. Mars, of course, is not suited for human life. We need to adapt the environment by sending cockroaches there that will mold the surface of the mold, would absorb the sunlight and stuff. Basically, make Mars habitable. Something bad happens. Astronauts go to Mars. Giant mutant cockroaches. Well, not giant. Humanoid mutant cockroaches to kill everything. That is our next series. Killer human cockroaches.
Oh, man. It's going to be like living in El Salvador all over again. This is a true story, by the way. The cockroaches there are fucking enormous. Oh, God, I'm having flashbacks to it. Nick, they were everywhere.
Once Chris is done with his therapy session.
My parents were getting a divorce back then, too. So many awful memories.
Bye.
Ultron, save me. Well, Captain America saved me, but you're in Ultron, so I have to go through you by proxy.